The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Happy Easter to y'all if that's something you observe. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check us out at ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Tonight, I've got Andy Ulrich co-hosting with me. Andy, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Cool. And joining us is Mike Newburn, director of Ohio Students for Concealed Carry. We are going to be taking calls at the last segment. So if you want to call in early, get on the line, 749-5500. Or if you're not local, 1-800-823-8255. We will be taking calls. We've actually got time set aside for it. So anyway, everybody met Andy last weekend. But Mike, you're new on the show.
I am.
So you drove down from Columbus, correct?
That's correct. I left an Easter celebration with some friends to drive down here and hang out with you guys.
So. Oh, I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
We're glad you could be here.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about Students for Concealed Carry and the organization, what they do and what the goals are.
Sure. Students for Concealed Carry is a nonpartisan group made up of students, faculty, staff, and other concerned citizens that want to restore the right that a law-abiding citizen has to carry a concealed firearm on a college campus for self-defense. We started right after Virginia Tech shooting, and then basically it was a real grassroots kind of thing, and then we grew up into a national organization. We've have been successful in several states with legislation and litigation. Most recently in Colorado, you guys I'm sure followed what happened in Colorado. We helped to keep the concealed carry ban from becoming law. In Colorado, we were trying to ban campus carry, and we were also instrumental in the lawsuit that went to the Colorado Supreme Court that basically affirmed that a university does not have the authority to regulate firearms above and beyond the legislature.
Right.
When I say nonpartisan, I mean I started Buckeyes for Concealed Carry on campus at Ohio State about a year ago, and one of the people that started the group with us is, you know, for all better words, you know, pretty flaming liberal is what some, you know, the stereotype people would throw out there.
Right.
But he recognizes that self-defense is a human right.
And that's kind of it. If I've been trying to do that, too. It's not necessarily a right-left sort of thing. It's more of, do you recognize that we all have the right to defend ourselves if we need to? And also that really there shouldn't be anybody that can say that when we go to an arbitrary location, our life's not important anymore.
That's correct. And that's what Students for Concealed Carry does, is we question this that arbitrary line that is the boundary of a college campus. If you're a licensee in the state you live in, here in Ohio, you know, it takes you to be 21 years old, no felonies, take a safety course, you can get a concealed handgun license. Well, that allows us to carry concealed handgun at loads of non-secure locations across the state, shopping malls, state parks, the Ohio State Fair, but not college campus. And
right.
So our position is why is college campus different? Why are we law-abiding citizens off campus, but then as soon as we cross campus, we all of a sudden go berserk? And can somebody point to that? And nobody can, so we're working to change those laws.
Yeah, and it seems like that seems to be kind of a knee-jerk reaction to Virginia Tech and some of the other, you know, Columbine was the one I was in high school when that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, so for whatever reason, there seems to be a disconnect between the idea of I can outlaw something that's already illegal and make it more illegal, and that will somehow fix the problem.
And yeah, that's a dangerous way to look at it because, and you know, a lot of people like to draw parallels between firearms and driving a car.
Right.
You know, they'll say, well, we regulate cars really heavily, and you have to get a license to have a car. You have to register your car to drive on a public roadway. You have to do all these things with a car. Why can't we do that with firearms? And so one of the disconnects that's made is that when you restrict firearms like that, and you start to put all these, you know, arbitrary things that we have to follow, you're reducing the law-abiding citizen's ability to defend themselves. And that's what it boils down to.
Well, and the other thing, too, and I mean, this might be slightly inflammatory, but driving is a privilege. Carrying a gun is a right, and there is a difference between a privilege and a right. And the idea that someone can turn a right into a privilege arbitrarily once again is kind of messed up.
Yeah, you know, philosophically speaking, of course, you know, you got to find a lot of people that believe that. But one of the things that we've been able to do as students for concealed carry is to really bring out the situation in a way that it's hard to really rebuke the position.
Right.
Right. We do this based on facts. We have the hard data is in our favor. And so when people start to look at these, you know, at these facts that you can touch, you know, we can go to the FBI and prove this stuff, then it becomes really hard to say, well, gosh, if we're already allowing concealed carry in all these other places, then you're right. College is not different.
Yeah. And just you're probably going to be a little more familiar with it than I am just because I haven't seen a college in years. what's the current disaster preparedness plan that most colleges have as far as a active spree shooter goes?
Well, so, I want to say that five or six out of 10 colleges, I read a recent report, and it's a little fuzzy with me now, admitted they weren't prepared for an active shooter scenario, or they felt like they weren't prepared adequately prepared for an active shooter scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you what it is at Ohio State because I'm a student there. And Ohio State's police department is a bunch of fantastic guys. They do a great job. And I'm absolutely certain that, you know, across the nation, they're one of the better prepared university police departments in the country for active shooter scenarios. But we've got to keep in mind that police can't be everywhere all the time. They can't follow every single student around, every single person that shows up on campus, because campus is non-secure. They can't follow every single person that walks around on campus to make sure they're not going to become an active shooter. So regardless of how well prepared your police force is, the risk is still there. And when you look at all these active shooter scenarios, you let me Colorado, the theater shooting in Colorado, the police did not enter the theater when the shooting was taking place.
Yeah,
they actually waited outside.
That particular police department hasn't subscribed to the first responder, one guy enters tactics yet.
And you know, a lot of departments don't. I mean, the police are they're great folks and they do a great job, but when you talk about an active shooter scenario, where a guy just walks into a Virginia Tech and locks the place down and starts shooting people up, you're talking about a bunch of sitting ducks.
Well, that's where you're supposed to hide under your desk and barricade yourself in the classroom and throw books at your attacker, right?
Yeah, or jump out the windows. We had some people, I guess, jumped out the windows.
Well, that beats nothing if that's everything.
But Mike, you got your cell phone with you. That will protect you.
Oh, that's right. I mean, if you get
911.
Yeah, the cops are on the way, and that's going to make everything better.
Well, you know, you point to that, and I lived in Piketon for a while before I went to Ohio State. I worked at the A plant down there in Piketon as an operator. I served in the Navy for 9 years, operated reactor plants, on submarines, and so I got in nuclear power, back in nuclear and down in Piketon. And a little story happened in Circleville last week. I'm sure you guys have heard about it. Brittany Jeffers.
I'm going to interrupt you just real quick, Mike. We'll pick up on that thought. When we get back, we're going to be pretty much talking about why this is so important right now. Anyway, you are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Wealthy and wise, the Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. So, Andy.
So, Mike, you were just, right before the break, you were leading us into the story about why 911 is not the save-all mechanism of the world. Why doesn't 911 bring the police immediately to your aid?
Well, I mean, you know, police can't be everywhere all the time. And a lot of times police departments have a wide acreage they have to cover with a very few amount of officers. Circleville, what happened to Brittany Jeffers, I was talking about that before the break, is a great example. People were calling in to the police department reporting a mob beating. And so the phone calls were being made while Miss Jeffers was being kicked and beaten to death in the street in front of her home. And police finally showed up after the mob had dispersed. It actually took them a day or two to find people who had beaten her. So it doesn't work. And recently in Columbus, we had 911 outages in several cities, several areas in Columbus, and we were getting notifications via Facebook that 911 outages had occurred, that you couldn't use 911 in Dublin, Ohio for a good day.
Right, right.
Is that where you just smoke signals? I mean.
Yeah, I guess smoke signals. Well, you know, we were talking about the active shooter scenario as well. And one thing you guys got to remember about active shooters is the psychology that they operate in. Dr. John Lott is great at discussing this. It's a fantasy situation, and they're really only there to prey on unarmed victims. And so the first sight or the first glimpse of armed resistance that they get, they usually end up taking their own life.
Right.
Clackamas Mall is a great example. This happened in Oregon over the summer. A guy walks in with an AR-15 style rifle, starts shooting the place up. His firearm jams. A college-age licensee unholsters his firearm, trains it on the shooter, can't get a clear shot because there are people running all the way around, so he never fires, but the shooter sees it, runs away. The next shot that shooter fires is the one that goes to his own head.
And I've heard this, and I've not had it confirmed, but the Clackamas Mall, I believe, was posted no carry, and that particular individual that was carrying there just missed it, and kind of thank God he did, because...
Well, initially reports indicated that it was no carry, but then the story came out about the, you know, the hero,
mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen anything either way that went back.
I've heard it both, but either way.
But we do know that the Colorado Theater was a no-carry zone.
Right.
We do know that when he chose his victims, he guaranteed he wasn't going to meet about the 3% of Coloradoans that had concealed carry permits at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
So why do you think, Mike, that this seems to be kind of such a polarizing issue? This is kind of like one of those rock bands that you either love it or you hate it, and there's not any middle ground. What's up with that?
Well, I think that what a lot of people have done over the years is we've lost touch of the fact that college students are adults. And so you hear a lot of people, use the word kid when they talk about college students. And there's this assumption that college students are, you know, everybody there is, you know, there to get drunk, to experiment with drugs, to experiment with all this nefarious type activity. And that's why you go to school, to do all these things, right, free of any kind of long-term effects.
Oh, I thought it was so you could be like the next doctor or lawyer or, you know, other person that we already give a lot of responsibility
to. That's what I thought, too.
Perhaps one of the most expensive ways to go and party for 4 years. I don't think you're going there to party when you're going to spend yourself into debt for many years to come.
That's true. I mean, but, you know, the Hollywood loves to play stereotypes, right? So Animal House is their stereotype that rules when it comes to college students. So what people do is they look at college students as a bunch of irresponsible, party-hard type people. And that just doesn't play out, you know, in society. I mean, yeah, you have your share of it, just like
right.
any of the segment of society. But when you talk about the licensee, the guy who goes out and gets a concealed handgun license, takes the 12 hours of training, and probably trains a lot more on their own after that.
Right.
I know a lot of the licensees that I know do. You're not talking about the kind of person that's going to be irresponsible with a firearm while they're, you know, out partying and drinking.
And just to be clear, too, in Ohio, 21 to get a concealed handgun license. I think there's only 6 states where you can be under 21, something of that nature.
Yeah, there are. I'm not sure what those states are. You can go to concealedcampus.org and look under our common arguments, and we do address that there.
Yeah.
But I do want to point out that, you know, that stereotype with relation to firearms is, like most stereotypes, not true. I know at Ohio State, we have 2 huge block parties every year, Woodfest and Chitfest. And for the past 2 years since I've been going to school there, they've gotten so large that riot police have had to come out to help break them up. Now, these are places that are off campus where you are otherwise authorized to conceal carry a firearm for your self-defense. And we have thousands, tens of thousands of intoxicated fraternity boys, sorority girls, and other people who come out there to party with those types, raising ruckus, But in the past 3 years, 2 years it's been going on, there has not been a single shot fired at all. As a matter of fact, when the police come out to break it up, the police usually end up using mace to break up those kinds of things. So when you point to, you know, the frat parties and the sorority parties as places where this kind of violence will happen, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. It's already it's off campus, and it's already not happening off campus.
Right, and that's already places where presumably people are already allowed to carry in. Once again, no issues.
That's right.
So, which is going to be a recurring theme to anyone that's listening to the show. If you're allowed to carry somewhere and you are carrying there, or if you think of people carrying in those places, generally no issues. I'm going to probably hammer that home for as long as they let me come on the radio. But so,
thanks for doing that.
Well, you know, hey, I get a hold of something, I just kind of chew on it for a little while.
Right.
So, you know, the place I was going with the 21, most places to get a concealed handgun license, you're talking about if you went right to college out of high school, a junior, you know, in college at that point, they've kind of, if even they are prone to excess, they've gotten it out of their system and they haven't gotten kicked out of school in the first 2 years. So
that's correct. Going, a lot of people, you know, that to do the experimentation, we hear about this term called the freshman 15. And it's the 15 pounds that freshmen gain when they leave home for the first time, because now they have, you know, access to a whole bunch of things they haven't had in the past. And those students are, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, aren't able to obtain a concealed handgun license in the state of Ohio. As a matter of fact, and under very, you know, few circumstances, are even able to legally possess or own a handgun in the state of Ohio. So that kind of weeds it out, you know. And another thing people talk about is, oh my God, guns in dorms. There's going to be all these thefts of guns in dorms. Well, most of the people who are 21 years old don't live on campus.
Right.
Unless they're like an RA, you know, a resident advisor or something like that, that are otherwise in charge of a bunch of those students. So you're telling me that this person can be in charge of 100 students' safety, but can't be trusted with a firearm for their self-defense.
And, you know, it's, once again, the other thing, and, you know, I've talked about this in the past, so I'm kind of repeating myself, but the concept of making something more illegal and that will somehow prevent it, the individuals that are prone to go and kill other human beings for enjoyment, for some reason, I don't think that extra 2 or 3 years on their sentence is of necessary, of concern to them, mm-hmm. you know. And it's, once again, ineffective laws that the only people that pay attention to them are the people that it doesn't matter if they're carrying a gun or not, because they're never going to cause an issue.
The consequences for a college student are very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
If even if you want to obey the law in the state of Ohio and keep a concealed handgun in your car while you're parked on college campus, most universities specifically ban that. They expressly forbid firearms on campus at all. So when you're under the authority of the university as a college student, and a perfect example is a young lady I know, an attractive young lady who's studying to be a dentist. She is in her last year of dental school. And as you can imagine, she has mountains of debt that she'll have to pay back when she gets done. Of course, she'll be able to because she's going to be a dentist, right? So she's probably going to earn pretty good money.
Right.
She has a concealed handgun license, and she ran into a situation where she had an active stalker. So you've got this young woman who has an active stalker, who has a concealed handgun license, and all she wants to do is follow the law and keep that gun in her car while she's on campus. Because she'll call the police and get escorts, and she'll be very, you know, careful about making sure people can walk her to her car. She feels like she can handle it on campus. But once she leaves campus, now she's disarmed.
Right.
And the decision for her to either follow the law, violate university policy, and possibly get caught, because in Ohio we have a mandatory notification requirement.
Right.
So possibly get caught.
And another thing that needs to go away.
Well, and get expelled from school.
Yeah.
And face mountain of debt. And never be able to practice dentistry, her chosen profession.
Right.
I mean, those consequences are very high. So she has to make a choice between that and dealing with this active stalker without her tool of self-defense.
And that's it. And it's kind of a lose-lose situation, because wrong about either one of those and your life's different, or, you know, effectively over.
Right. You know, a lot of people point to students, right? And I want to make it, you know, really clear to you that we're a student-led organization. But this affects more than just students, right? I mean, we have 55,000 students at Ohio State University. 60,000, somewhere in that range. For every student, there are about 1.5 faculty members, faculty staff support members. So you've got another 75,000, 80,000 people who are subjected to being disarmed on the college campus that this impacts. And then forget about the visitors, right? The moms and dads who travel with their children from Cleveland.
Well, they don't matter either.
So. Yeah, they don't matter either. Forget about them, right? Those guys that want to come to campus and visit their kids on the weekend or during parent weekend, or people that come from northeastern Ohio down to UC, and have to cross through the Clifton area to visit their children at Ohio at University of Cincinnati. This affects more than just students. It's anybody that has a concealed handgun license in the state of Ohio. You're told you can't do that on campus because campus is somehow different.
And not only that, but the whole you can't even leave it in your car if you want to go on campus effectively means that from point A to point B, you're not allowed to have a gun.
That's correct.
So,
yeah,
I don't know. It just, as I've noticed oftentimes, it doesn't make very much sense, but, So... I guess something else I kind of wanted to cover too, and you sort of hit on it earlier, but generally I saw a study, and I don't know if it was Lott that did it, but the amount of time that it took for an armed response to a shooting, like a mass shooting, versus the number of bodies that ended up on the ground, and there was a direct correlation between, the quicker somebody showed up, the quicker people stop dropping, pretty much.
Well, I mean, look at Clackamas Mall, right?
Yeah.
The licensee in Clackamas Mall unholstered his firearm after three people had been shot. What if, police are great. They do great things, but they can't be everywhere all the time. What would happen if we had to wait on the police to show up to Clackamas Mall? Would it have been a mass shooting? See, it didn't even meet the FBI definition of a mass shooting because there were less than four victims.
Right.
So would it have been one?
Well, and you don't ever know.
You'll never know. And that's the reason these things don't make the news, right? That's the reason they don't make the news.
And I think a point needs to be made that Aurora stopped because he had a malfunction. He went outside, and then either he lost nerve to go back in or has just decided that was it.
Right.
Hey, I'm done. I take it back. I don't know. It's one of those things that really... The answer seems simple to me, but I don't know that, some states are starting to catch on, but it's hard. So coming up next, we're going to talk about what you're trying to do to get lawmakers to make campuses safer. You're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Because we don't all agree.
I hate to tell you, you're wrong.
The conversation happens here.
I really don't agree with anything.
55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Just a reminder, we will have time allotted for calls at the end of the show after the next commercial break. If you'd like to discuss campus carry, and I want to be clear there because, certain things we'll cover on different shows. You can call in at 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Please try and keep the questions for Mike about campus carry and the organization and all that. So, and we were kind of talking on the break, the mass killings are what gets a lot of media attention, but just basic crime on college campuses, not necessarily a Garden of Eden as far as that goes.
Well, college campuses, I can speak for Ohio State because that's where I go to school. College campuses are a different environment than the regular city. And Ohio State's very well lit. You have a very high concentrated compared to the rest of the city police presence at Ohio State. So crime on campus is comparatively speaking, outside the city, lower. But we have this line that extends from Lane Avenue up to High Street. And students, unfortunately, don't get to stay on college campus all the time and have to walk home sometimes late at night from the library after studying or you know, after late night clinicals, or like last year, a student walking in the band, walking at 5 o'clock in the morning to answer a band call for a home football game, that that get assaulted on their way to and from campus, where it's not well lit, where the police presence isn't really that high. And when you disarm us on campus, you disarm us off campus as well. So we can't defend ourselves from the garden variety assault, robbery, burglary, rape, stabbing. We've had, you know, a couple of stabbings near campuses, actually in Columbus last week, Columbus Community College. Stabbing near campus, student walked onto campus to treat himself in a bathroom. No, not a student. It was a non-affiliate. Walked onto campus to treat himself in a bathroom. So it's there, you know, it's off campus. And specifically with Ohio State, we have Short North, Old North, and University District. Short North is a great artistic district, really, you know, fancy stuff. I love going there for their, you know, gallery hop. And University District is where all of the students mostly live in the fraternity and sorority houses, and then Old North is just south of that. So if you look at crime, violent crime, in those three districts, you're going to see that crime in the University District happens at a rate anywhere from 1.5 to 2 times as high as it does in the Old North and the Short North districts. And a lot, I think a large part of that reason is because students are disarmed. And criminals know that we're walking back from campus carrying laptops, expensive cell phones, and we have no way to defend ourselves. So instead of trying to fight back, we're either going to just give them our stuff, or like they want women to do up in Colorado, urinate ourselves or vomit on ourselves to prevent a rape.
Well, that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
That is my plan if anyone ever attempts that and for whatever reason I'm disarmed. But it's the whole concept too, and we talked about this last week. Criminals tend to go where there are nice things that they can take. As much fun as it is to rip off, you know, the $5 from your buddy next door, and that's all he's got, that $2,000 or $3,000 laptop or the new iPhone or iPod or whatever it is you're into that you don't want to go and get a job to pay for is easy to get.
And, you know, they also go to where it's not only, you know, where the stuff is, but you say where it's easy to get. Dr. John Lott recently had published a study that indicated the single most effective policy measure that can be taken to prevent and reduce crime is the passage of concealed carry laws. Rossi and Wright did a study, a landmark study for the FBI, interviewed felons all across the country, and found that 57% of all violent criminals say they fear an armed citizen more than the police. They also said that a smart criminal will seek out a home with an unarmed homeowner.
Right.
And if you want to compare country to country, in Great Britain, break-ins occur at home when people are at home at a rate 4 times that they do here in the United States. It's because we can fight back.
Well,
so criminals don't want – listen, nobody likes to leak.
Right? Yeah.
Nobody wants the red stuff come out of their body.
No.
Getting shot hurts. And so criminals don't want to get hurt. Crime's a dangerous business. So they're going to take the path of least resistance.
Well, and the other thing, too, you brought up Great Britain. They've pretty much legislated it to the point where it's illegal to defend yourself. You're just as likely to go to prison for defending yourself as a criminal is for trying to attack you.
Yeah, that's a whole myriad of other, you know,
yeah,
other issues.
I just wanted to bring that up.
And the crime statistics that generally that people who are against guns like to present there presents it in such a way that gun crime is lower in England. Well, yeah, gun crime may be lower in England because there are no guns. But the other violent crimes take the place of those gun violence crimes.
That's correct. Yeah, they're actually looking at banning knives now, I think.
Yeah, unless you're a chef or you know, can provide a reason that you need a knife over a certain length.
Yeah.
So it's ridiculous.
So one of the things that, you know, that we do when we do our protests and we do our activism is we, you know, while mass shootings are important to address, they're statistically rare.
Right.
You're more likely to be struck by lightning than you are to be involved in a mass shooting, according to some studies that we hear.
Maybe we should mandate lightning rods in all occupied structures and stuff like that, just to make sure.
I think we already do.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
So what you get instead is you know, when we speak to students, because I'm gonna tell you right now that if I were to talk to 10 students at Ohio State's campus or 10 students at UC's campus, 8 or 9 of them is going to know someone personally that's been a victim of violent crime off campus. or know someone who knows somebody. They're going to be two people away from someone who's been a victim of violent crime. And so when we talk to those students and we talk to their parents or we talk to faculty and staff, and we just pose the question, how would things have been different if you could have fought back?
It seems, once again, like common sense, but we don't have much of that when we start talking about this for some reason, as a nation at least.
Well, we're moving, you know, on college campuses, we're moving more towards the common sense. I get asked the question a lot, you know, Mike, what kind of resistance do you get to, you know, this on campus? Well, I'm an engineering student, and engineers live in the world of reality, facts, and data. So when I get resistance from another engineering student or a faculty or staff member, I don't get a lot, but when I do get some, I just, I start to point to the data that's out there. And a lot of times after about 5 minutes, it's gosh, you're right. And I've had a lot of people tell me, I'm not comfortable carrying a gun, but I understand exactly now why you say and I agree with you. I agree it's a good idea to not restrict people anymore.
And I've never really understood the whole concept of, well, I'm not comfortable with doing something, but I want to make sure that no one else has the option either.
So, generally, wouldn't you say that most people who are anti-carry, it's an emotional reaction and not a fact-based reaction?
That's correct. Yeah, that's what I would say. And we have our empty holster protest coming up next week. And so one of the things that we do when we do these empty holster protests is when we encounter someone that comes to us from a point of emotion that is unreasonable, we usually just, you know, thanks very much for your time and turn around and move on to the next person. Because a lot of people look at that and, you know, not everybody is listening to you directly. You're not talking to everybody directly, but there are a lot of people walking by and seeing what you're doing. Right. And so when you run into the people that, you know, get fanatical about that and start screaming and hooting and hollering about how guns are evil and guns are bad, and you're the gun guy and you're like, well, thanks a lot, I appreciate it, and turn and walk away. And it says a lot about, you know, but we don't get that very much, to be honest with you. It's starting to, I think, I'm optimistic in that the tide is turning and people are starting to look at this thing with, you know, realistic eyes instead of clouded by emotion. Because it can be an emotional topic, you know. I mean, it can be emotional on both sides. And that's one of the things about being, you know, a good activist is that you don't get emotional about it. I'm passionate, but I'm not emotional, right?
Right. And once again, it seems like name-calling is the common response. I get that a lot when I start talking with folks about things. So if you're a gun person, if you're, you know, a gun guy or girl and want to, you know, kind of get your point across to people and kind of want to talk to people and educate them and try and sway them to your point of view, it might be really, really important to think about how you're approaching that and what you're saying and how you're saying it and making sure that above all, you're courteous.
The thing to keep in mind, John, is that it's everyone's emotions are valid, right?
Yeah.
You don't understand all of the things that went into play for that person to develop the emotions that they have. Now, their reason for wanting to disarm you may not be valid, and you can address that, but trying to convince someone their emotions are invalid is not going to get you anywhere except deeper in the hole. So just stay away from that altogether.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we do. That's the thing that I think Students for Concealed Carry is good about. There are a lot of other gun groups out there and a lot of other gun groups that are very successful. But sometimes I kind of feel like, you know, they kind of preach to the choir a little bit. And we, instead of preaching to the choir, we kind of go out and evangelize. You know,
right.
Let's go out. Let's walk out here on campus and let's talk to a bunch of people who think guns are evil. And let's just spend a few minutes chatting with you really quick. And, you know, let's talk about how they're not so bad and how limiting your right to defend yourself is not a good thing to do. And so rather than, you know, preaching to the choir, we take a more evangelical approach. And I think that's one reason why we've been successful, too.
Well, and it seems like y'all are doing a lot of good things at various parts around the country. Like you were saying at the beginning of the show, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
We'll spend a little bit of time in coming up. I'd kind of like to hear your thoughts on Ohio and how that's going.
Sure.
You know, once again, if anyone would like to call in and would like to talk about this topic, 749-5500, 1-800-823-8255. Got some people calling in that, you know, I'd love to talk to them, but we're spending time with Mike today and want to talk about the things that, well, he's knowledgeable on. So anyway, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
This is your exclusive home for Glenn Beck.
Oh, man.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Here with Mike Newbern, Ohio Students for Concealed Carry. Mike, appreciate you hanging out the entire show and making the drive down.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. I got to tell you guys, you got some great intro music.
I'm trying. That was, my little, going to sneak that in there, contribution to the show, other than talking for the 45 minutes or whatever it is. So, but for those that know me, kind of into the metal. Anyway, so what's going on in Ohio? How's it looking here realistically?
Well, it's always nice when you have a legislator reach out to you versus you reaching out to a legislator. So I'll lead off with that.
Okay.
As you know, we have a majority of in the Senate who subscribe to the self-defense, you know, that doing the quote with my fingers, the gun-loving culture Republicans. We've got a few Democrats that have reached out to us as well and have indicated support for campus concealed carry. So there's a senator right now that we're working with to draft legislation. And I'm very confident that based on the conversations I've had with this senator that we will be able to introduce something before summertime. And will it pass this year? I don't know. That's kind of like a long shot, you know, the first year it coming out. Yeah. But I think that if we consider how campus concealed carry is a very radical idea in a lot of places and how we've allowed our rights to be eroded over the past century, you know, with respect to firearms, then we kind of have to start to realize that you're not going to get them all back in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
And it takes time. So introducing a bill, even this early in the game, because we've only been around, you know, had a presence in Ohio now for a little bit over a year, a real presence in Ohio for a little over a year. Introducing it this early into the game, I think it's a great idea because it's getting people talking about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and the more they talk about it, the less radical it becomes. Right, they start to get normalized to it a little bit. So it's important to keep having that conversation.
Well, and that was one of the reasons I was so excited when you said you'd come on the show, is just because I really, really, really think this is an important issue that not only should be a conversation that everyone's having, but also, too, if campus carry is something that you feel is a good idea and it's something you'd like to see happen, you know, just thinking that to yourself quietly is all well and good, but politicians, as weird as it sounds, do what they're told, you know, and if enough people are telling them, hey, you're not going to get reelected unless, well, you know, so you need to be calling your representatives, your state senators, anyone you can get a hold of. Also, too, if you've got friends and family that feel the same way you do, have them call, too. And persistence is key. One call is nice, you know, 25, 30 calls, even better.
Emails.
Calls. Write. Mm-hmm. Call and write.
Mm-hmm.
I have a card to my representative in Washington in my pocket. It's going in the mail tonight. You have to do that.
You do. And when you do it, you have to keep in mind, too, that you know, while these guys work for us, they're also humans. And so they respond to respectfully written emails and respectful phone calls. You know, don't be like the guy in Colorado that called up his lawmaker and made threats to his lawmaker and ends up going to jail. That's just doesn't do anybody any good.
Well, and that's kind of something that I come back to almost every show is, you know, there are a lot of what I consider to be inaccurate stereotypes about gun people. And I hate to use the term gun people, but, you know, I'll call a spade a spade. Mm-hmm. I think everybody sitting at the table right now would say gun people is an accurate descriptor. It's key that we challenge preconceived notions when we're talking to folks that haven't ever been exposed to it. It is key that we articulate ourselves well and intelligently, and, you know, like you said, Mike, respectfully, mm-hmm. and just take the time to think about what it is you want to say, and also take the time to think about a way that you can say it that's not, you know, I don't want to use the term offensive, because obviously it offends some people, the topic in general, but it's just professional. Professional is such a good word to use for this.
And you talked about stereotypes. I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, recently with Colorado, hopefully everybody knows what I'm talking about when it comes to the campus concealed carry ban. A lady by the name of Catherine Whitney out in Colorado sort of led our charge to help defeat the campus concealed carry ban. Now, this 27-year-old female, law student, vegetarian, yoga practicing, fitness buff, law student, right? None of the stereotypes.
Right.
And so what you got to do is you got to be careful not to fit in those stereotypes, you know? Don't be the guy who's, you know, when they take guns away, only criminals have guns. You know, that's a great saying, right? But it's cliche, and everybody kind of flips off when they hear you say that.
Yeah.
So, you know, instead, just, you know, go to fact and emotion, logic and reason. And one of the things people look at me, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'3", weigh 275 pounds. I wear a beard. You know, I have a certain look about me. People look at me and they're like, oh, my God, you probably grew up with a gun in your hand, you know, beer in your other, beer in another one, gun in the other hand, you know, kind of stuff. I'm like, no, I didn't actually start really getting involved in firearms until I decided to move to Columbus and realized, you know, what kind of situation I was getting into going to school.
See, what you just described was actually, I fit that stereotype as far as, you know, I've been shooting since I was 5. Thanks, Dad. you know, so, but once again, it's just really important to be able to talk about the topic and be knowledgeable about it. And like you said, I know I'm repeating mm-hmm. you, which I tend to do when I get around people that are smarter than me. But
oh, thank you.
it's just, you know, really, really important to be able to have a dialogue. Dialogue is key. Having a conversation with someone is nice. I can talk to anybody. Whether or not they're listening is another thing.
Exactly.
So dialogue, you know, everybody gets fired up about this. You know, you said earlier, passionate. Mm-hmm. I think that that's all well and good, and it's good to have that motivating you and driving you. But just keep in mind that if someone approached you about, I don't know, driving a V10 versus a V8, and they were really 4 V10s, and to the point where they're yelling and screaming at you that, you know, you're an idiot unless you ascribe to the same beliefs, what are you going to do there? Are you going to listen or not?
Well, you know, I want to. There's something that we, you know, there's like the elephant in the room for me right now, and that is that you might be talking to someone who is adamantly opposed to your right to carry a firearm, but that doesn't mean that everybody walking by observing your conversation is decided one way or the other. And so if you take the route of being the, you know, being the stereotype, right, you'll turn off people who otherwise didn't make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
So when I engage people who, you know, who are opposed, and I realize, like, you know, I engage the Toby Hoovers and folks like that, I realize that I'm never going to change Toby's mind. What I am going to be able to do is affect people who are watching us engage each other. So you got to keep that in mind, right? You're not going to win that person, but there are other people who are watching, and if you could lose them quickly by
right.
being the stereotype.
And that's, you know, we live in a society nowadays where video cameras on cell phones and, you know, those sorts of things are prevalent to a point that is unimaginable to me 10 years ago. So just someone's looking, and you never know the next national headline you're going to make if you have a bad day and, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
tell somebody what you think about them. It, you know, if you want to think it quietly to yourself, that's fine, I guess.
Don't rant,
you know,
and rave on YouTube, please.
Oh, yeah.
Please. Let's not touch that one.
Well, yeah, there's been people that should know better. National level firearms trainers, I'm thinking one in particular whose name I'm not going to mention because I don't respect his work very much, but, you know, just, if you've got any sort of audience, be nice.
So I guess we're getting ready to, I'm looking at the clock, so I want to make sure that, you know, people know that they can check us out at concealedcampus.org.
Mm-hmm.
You can make donations there. You can get involved at the state level and the campus level there. If you don't see a chapter at your campus, you can apply to be a campus leader. So, you know, those of you who have children that are getting ready to grow up and go to college and think they might be interested in doing something like this, they can either join an active chapter on campus or start one of their own. And here in the state of Ohio, I do believe that we will have some legislation ready for this summer, but it's important that people start. Right now, we start making phone calls to our senators, phone calls, emails, and don't overlook faxes either.
Faxes.
And don't over, you know, I mean, I know it's archaic, right? And you got a college student telling you to send faxes, but don't overlook that.
It's not just for realtors and firearms dealers.
And Facebook, too.
Social media.
Yep,
that's the bugaboo today, social media.
No. Well, anyway, I really appreciate you coming on, Mike. It was a great conversation. It went way too quick, as it usually does.
You got to remind us.
Next week, we'll be talking about how to carry and conceal a gun with Spencer Keepers, owner of Keepers Concealment. See you next Sunday, 7 p.m. right here on 55 KRC. Make sure you check out the website, ballisticradio.com, and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Everybody be safe. Thanks for listening. Have a good night. You can see his stripes, but you know he's